From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the Togiak herring fishery closed over the weekend, less than 2 weeks after its surprise opening. We listened in on a workshop in Kodiak on how to add value to roe. And an acquisition by Pacific Seafoods is blocked by the Ninth Circuit Court. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
On Tuesday, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld an injunction in an antitrust lawsuit brought by a group of West Coast fishermen trying to stop the merger of Pacific Seafoods Group with Ocean Gold Seafoods. The ruling was reported first in Courthouse News Service. Lead plaintiff Jeff Boardman sued Pacific Seafoods and Ocean Gold in January 2015, arguing that Pacific Seafoods' plan to buy Ocean Gold would monopolize the West Coast seafood market. A lower court granted the plaintiff's motion for a preliminary injunction, and the Circuit Court's three-judge panel upheld that judgment. Writing for the panel, Circuit Judge Wallace Tashima said that the fisherman's argument satisfied the statutory requirements for a preliminary injunction since they adequately demonstrated that the proposed merger would substantially reduce competition and could cause irreparable harm. The party's attorney were not immediately available to comment. Fisheries researchers say the appearance of a warm water anomaly in the Northeast Pacific Ocean likely added a new wrinkle into recent predictions of Alaska salmon runs. But because of the variability of West Coast salmon populations, a simple cause and effect may be impossible to pin down. Biologists' forecasts of salmon runs are considered crucial by the commercial fishing industry in planning for the new season. KTOO's Matt Miller tells us more.
Biologists are still not sure exactly how the warm water blob is affecting salmon up and down the West Coast.
You know, a thing we need to kind of think about is warm water in Alaska is really different than warm water in California.
That's Brian Beckman, a research fishery biologist at the Northwest Fisheries Science Center in Seattle.
Warm water in California can be so warm that it's actually injuring the fish, whereas warm water in Alaska just means it's abnormally different. And maybe the ecosystem is different, but it's still a comfortable place for fish to be.
Beckman was one of the organizers of the Salmon Ocean Ecology Meeting in Juneau in March, which featured biologists and researchers from California to Alaska. Because of differences in the life cycles and migration patterns of the five Pacific Ocean salmon species, Beckman says it's impossible to immediately determine how the blob is affecting salmon abundance, run timing, growth, forage habits, and complicated predator-prey relationships.
It's really hard to talk about salmon runs all across the coast in any one single focus because they all do kind of different things. So yeah, the blob does not have one specific effect across all salmon stocks.
So why would any of that information be important? The $414 million answer to that question comes from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. That's the dock price paid for all salmon harvested last year. In addition, the McDowell Group of Juneau says Alaska salmon fisheries generate $840 million in income for well over 18,000 direct jobs. Joe Orsi, fisheries research biologist at the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute in Auk Bay, explains why they bother with researching salmon biology and do modeling or run simulations to predict Alaska salmon abundance, run timing, and even size of the fish.
You basically, you confront the stakeholder and say, this is what we think is going to happen, and you interact with the industry people, and these are when the decisions are made.
They include decisions by state fisheries managers who plan the timing and length of the openings, the processors which dispatch tenders and hire outside help to work in the plants, and the fisherman who must budget his or her expenses and figure out how many deckhands to hire. Orsi says they're not sure if it was the blob's presence in the Northeast Pacific that threw a monkey wrench into their modeling for last year's salmon runs, Overall, last year's pink harvest in southeast Alaska fell well short of predictions, with runs in the southern part of the panhandle failing badly. Now, the big question is whether El Nino or equatorial warming has encouraged other species to wander north.
And, of course, we have unknown ecological impacts of the subtropical fish species that were occurring in the Gulf of Alaska, the tuna, sunfish, pressure sharks. And we don't know if there's going to be increased competition or predation as a result of those.
In order to get a better handle on what is happening, researchers have created a coastwide database that will visually show how the blob is affecting various salmon runs. Brian Burke, a research fishery biologist at the Northwest Fisheries Science Center in Seattle, helped design it.
This could be a good way to summarize when and where did the blob impact salmon. The fact is, we don't know yet because a lot of the salmon that were in the blob have not returned yet.
And some of those fish that have not returned yet are mature Copper River reds. It's traditionally the very first commercial salmon fishery of the year. They could start arriving sometime in mid-May. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
I love Alaskan salmon, wild Alaskan salmon, caught by Alaskan fishermen. I love cod and shellfish, they sure make a swell dish. I think that halibut is grand. I don't want T-bone steak carved from a steer in Texas, but give me fish. And I don't give a damn if I do pay taxes. I love Alaskan salmon, good Alaskan salmon, caught by Alaskan fishermen.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
A workshop about roe or fish eggs last week covered everything from the market to how to judge roe quality. About 30 students took the course over 2 days in Kodiak, and KMXT's Kayla DeRoche dropped by the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center pilot plant to check it out.
Look at your hydrated product.
Chris Bledsoe slaps a skein of Polygro down onto a plastic tray. A group of workshop participants are standing around a table wearing hairnets and gloves. And Bledsoe, one of the instructors of the workshop and the president of Aquatic Foods International, a consulting company, says they're trying to sort the skeins according to grade, which is important for marketing and selling roe in countries where it's popular, like Japan.
Color is one of the key components of it. It's something that really becomes a major issue in Japan as far as creating a finished product. So it is something that they should see that as well as the cuts and tears.
He says the students should be looking for skeins that are brownish, tans, and cream colors rather than very dark or pale skeins. One of the participants, Dennis Ball, says he fishes in Bristol Bay and has a small processing plant. He says he recalls Bledsoe telling them that most workers have to determine roe grade in 5 seconds. He says it's taking them a whole lot longer to deliberate.
Of course, I've only been at this for 15 minutes. So.
Ball says it's the first time he's ever seen pollock roe and explains he wants to bring back a larger awareness about fish roe to his processing plant. Previously, what had you done with roe?
Unfortunately, we just threw it away. We just we were doing salmon fillets, and if we could do something with the heads and the tails and the backbones, then that's what we're going to try and do, as many different products, try and utilize most of the fish as possible.
Ball stands with other students and holds one of the skeins in his hands.
Kind of reminds me of chicken liver. The texture, kind of slimy. So those are the eggs there. It just kind of turns into a paste.
Bledsoe says that consistency may be due to a number of elements, including maturity and age of the product. But one thing that won't sell, parasites, like one a workshop instructor found on a skein. Glenn Bledsoe, Chris Bledsoe's father and professor of food science at Washington State University, says the parasitic worm is called Anisakis.
Once you freeze it, it kills it, so it's not a problem. It's just a different form of protein. But in a product like this, you want to get it removed off the thing.
One of the local researchers slips the skein into a clear bag to study later. That's just one bonus Kodiak scientists get from the workshop. I'm Kayla Darroche.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
After a big haul last Thursday and reportedly good fishing on Friday, the Department of Fish and Game decided to close down the Togiak Purse Seine herring fishery last Saturday. KDLG's Dave Benninger tells us more.
Just over 2 weeks ago, the first spawn in Togiak was sighted, long before the industry or the fleet was ready to start fishing. All hustled for the grounds and got after it, but the weather blew out the effort for several days. The catches were dropping off through the week, but rebounded big time Thursday with a 3,200-ton haul and close to 1,000 more by midday Friday. This season, Togiak Seiners have brought in about 15 out of their 20,000-ton quota, a number that's expected to climb by Saturday's closure. Area manager Tim Sand says the trigger to close the fishery is the size of the individual fish. In order to protect future runs, Fish and Game guards against harvesting the little guys.
The older fish have gone through and spawned, but this next generation, these younger fish, we want them to have a chance to spawn before we start harvesting a whole bunch of them. And we feel like we're getting to the point right now that over 30% of the fish that are being taken are those younger 4, 5, and 6 age classes that really need to be protected at this point.
The bigger fish are typically 8, 9, or 10-year-olds who have already spawned, and for whatever reason, they tend to hit the beaches first. That was an early concern when the fleet got a late start that they might miss out entirely.
I'm very surprised we're going to take that much of the quota. After missing the first several days of the run, I was not expecting to get this close to the quota. Honestly, I would have liked to keep it open a little bit longer, but we have to err on the side of conservation.
Togiak herring are known for their big size, and the quality and percentage of the roe yield has also been high again this year. Icicle Seafood's Warner Liu gave an update Friday morning from aboard the floating processor Gordon Jensen.
Quality remains consistently really good. This is 11-12% roe content, and that's typically you only see that sort of thing in the gillnet fishery, but it's been great all season.
There are two gillnet boats participating this year, and they can keep fishing for now. Their gear allows for more selective harvest. The Seiners have to wrap up Saturday by noon. How much closer they get to their 20,000-ton quota should be known by Monday. But what the increased harvest does to the value of their catch, with a market that seems to have more than enough herring roe, that remains to be seen. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KTOO's Matt Miller in Juneau, GameXT's Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, and KDLG's Dave Benninger in Dillingham. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.